to have this, this, or this in order to be able to do this.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let us begin our Public Safety Committee meeting. And the chair would like to recognize Council President Pro Tem Penrose Hollins in attendance, Councilwoman Janet Kilpatrick, Councilman Tim Sheldon, Councilman Dave Tackett, Councilman George Smiley, Councilman John Cartier, Councilwoman Lisa Diller, and Councilman Joe Retta, and my legislative aide, Karen Barlow. What's your pleasure with the minutes of the previous meeting?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Okay, the first thing we have on the agenda today is Ordinance 14-014. Amend the grants budget, appropriate $34,250 in Special Law Enforcement Assistant Fund, SLEAF, from the State of Delaware Department of Justice to the Department of Public Safety, SLEAF Police Training Grant. And the synopsis basically explains that this will allow the department to train 15 officers in the use of new software and training the officers that are assigned to the evidence detection squad in our county police department. Are there any questions in reference to this particular ordinance? Okay. Hearing none, we'll go to Ordinance 14-013 and combined 14054, which are both 03 enables 054, but it's to amend the capital budget, transfer $225,000 of appropriations and general obligation bond authorizations from the communications upgrade project to the 800 megahertz project. And I'll just touch on it real briefly, and then we have Chief Miller here today that can go into a little bit more detail on the current status of our 800 megahertz radio system and this project and the upgrades that are being requested. But basically, these funds would be added to $150,000, which was authorized under the communications upgrade, or the 800 megahertz project upgrade, and bringing it to a total of $375,000. It would allow for the purchase of 74 new 800 megahertz radios, portable radios that will replace the current portable radios for our Emergency Medical Service Division personnel. So with that, Chief Miller and Deputy Chief Streets with us today. Chief?
Yes, thank you, Council. Jeff Miller, Newcastle County 911 Center. I have Bill Streets with me in case I can't answer any of the technical questions. But the 800 megahertz system throughout the state of Delaware, which is the public safety radio system that we use, is undergoing upgrading over the next 4 and 5 years. A critical piece of the infrastructure that will be replaced will render a large number of portable radios and eventually some mobile radios useless as we upgrade the software. These radios are currently somewhere in the area of 22 years old today. So we were also offered an opportunity that we had not prepared for during the upgrade and the purchase of the new portables that we were making the purchase for with the police department. Was Motorola made available only in the state of Delaware trade-in value for the police portables. That so we weren't expecting that trade-in value where we would get $1,000 a radio back. So it made sense to move forward, buy all new radios for all of EMS, replace all their radios that would render useless in 2017, and then take back some of their radios that would still be good even beyond that lifespan, and take those radios and reallocate them throughout other areas of public safety. The Sheriff's Department, Code Enforcement is out using the radio system as well. So what moving this money will do right now is provide us the opportunity to replace 74 radios in EMS, take advantage of a trade-in that we had not anticipated, and then redeploy radios that will last throughout the upgrade throughout other areas of public safety.
Questions for the chief? Councilman Smiley?
I just comment, great deal, so we're saving $74,000. Getting $1,000 a radio.
For every radio we send back, yes, we'll get a $1,000 credit.
I was going to ask you, but when you said they were 22 years old, I figured it was the trash bin.
Now, the issue that they run into is some of the parts for it's called XTS 3000 that will be rendered at its service life in 2017. There's another model radio that's still out there that some of those parts work for.
Okay.
So what Motorola is doing is they're taking as many of the XTS 3000 and reallotting the parts for them.
I was figuring you couldn't get parts because that's the problem I'm having with my 8-track.
Yes, that's it. Perfect understanding.
Get you from stealing your car, sir.
So when it's all said and done, Chief, as far as the portable inventory for emergency medical services, will that pretty much replace most of their portables or a pretty good portion of them?
Yeah, this should make it so that all of their portables will be compliant through the 2017 upgrade so that they will all work after that phase.
Good. Any other question? Okay. We appreciate it very much. Appreciate you being here and keep up the fine work.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Under other, before we open up for other discussion, I thought it might be helpful. Director Bryant and I have spoken this week several times, and he has graciously volunteered to kind of give us a little bit of an update on our Emergency Medical Services Training Academy that's underway. And then after the director concludes that, he'll be calling upon Dave Carpenter, our coordinator of emergency management, to give us an update on the pending nor'easter storm for tomorrow night through Friday night.
Damn groundhog.
Well, unless he's talking about showing up with a shovel or a snowblower, I don't want to hear it.
Cancel.
I need more than that. Good afternoon. Joe Bryan, Public Safety Director for Newcastle County. As the councilman said, we had a conversation about this class that we have in for paramedics. And we are extremely proud, excited about what we have, the makeup of this class. We have 16 total. They're presently up at school. This past week, last week, we had them at the public safety building doing an orientation. And we had the opportunity to get to know them and for them to learn about county government. On Monday morning, it was their first day at the academy up in Westchester at Goodstay. I'm not sure how they made out, but I'm sure they did just fine because I think we have a great bunch of individuals, these young folks, who their degrees are across the board. They're extremely ticketed. They have great work ethic. They really want to be here to help folks. So we're very, very pleased with our candidates. Of the makeup of the class, there's 5 African-American, one of which is an African-American female, 1 Spanish male, 2 white females, and the rest are white males. And just under half came out of the military. Just under half, which is really another. We focused in, and someone asked about this. We focused in when we came to you guys last year this time. We talked about a plan that we had in place and how we were going to reach out and try to identify and diversify this class, and that's just what we did. We traveled up and down the East Coast. We were in churches, we were in church bulletins, we were at community centers, we were at the unemployment office, we were at the military bases up and down the East Coast. You name it, we were on Market Street at Rodney Square. Wherever we could think of, we could go and try to identify some great candidates. That's where we went. We had 1 primary recruiter, but at the same time, I think, which was very important, we had a team of others, active paramedics who recruited, who went out into the streets, into the community centers, wherever we could go to recruit. And I think that was important because a lot of folks, I don't think, in the community knew a lot about what paramedics, what it meant to be a paramedic job. So in addition to having individuals go out, paramedics, that is, we had information sessions. We had two per week, and the average attendee was probably close to 50, which was, I think, pretty incredible. A lot of questions asked, but more importantly, a lot of information shared with them. And most of them who came, they left, and if they weren't, if they didn't have an application already on file, there was one that followed shortly thereafter. So, you know, again, it was great to see them all in somewhat of a uniform last Monday at our place. You could see in their eyes how much they really wanted to be here. And we feel, you know, we're fairly confident the mass majority will complete the course of studies. It's a tough course. It's 11 months. They understand how tough it's going to be. But they were told everything else now becomes secondary to this class. If you want to make it, you have to put all of your energy, your time and energy into this study. So essentially that's it, Councilman. Obviously we did not just paramedics, but we had a lot of support from the police. We had support from communications and emergency management. All of them took part in making this class this class a success. I mean, every division within public safety played a role in identifying candidates, putting them through some form of training. So it was a huge effort by the Department of Public Safety to put this class in place. So,
just a few comments, and Council President Pro Tem Hollins and I, along with yourself, have had some extensive conversations about this process and how well it went and how dedicated yourself as Public Safety Director and our department, all the various divisions working together to really reach out and try to accomplish what, you know, we've all been saying for a long time. And I think that the one thing that impresses me the most is your commitment, the commitment of the division chiefs to want to work with, mentor, and work to have these folks graduate and become paramedics.
Yeah.
That this isn't just putting folks in a class, and if they make it, they make it. If they don't, they don't. I think the field training operations is going to be key to this. And I know that, you know, we've had conversation, and you're committed to make this a successful program. And I think what we as the county government have done here is I think we've set the stage to say to other educational facilities that limited us to the number of folks that we could put in a class. There's other ways to do this. There's other ways to accomplish it. This is a very creative path forward. And, you know, like I say, you know, President Pro Tem and myself had a lengthy discussion about it. And I think your efforts hopefully will result in you know, a real good future of our paramedic program.
The one thing that we decided to do, we have a paramedic that's assigned to the academy full-time, but we will assign a paramedic to each one of our recruits. So if there's a problem, if there's a concern, if there's a question, as opposed to having it unanswered, you're going to have a relationship with one of our paramedics that you can go to that person and get the answer. And I think that's key to success. Oftentimes, when one's going through the academy, they don't have anyone to lean on. They don't have anyone to go to. We're going to establish that, and we've already established that very early on. But you know, you're going to know who you. There's going to be one person that you can always call day or night, and they will be. And these folks volunteered to do this, so they will be available to these recruits as they go through. As they go through the process of the academy and beyond.
Okay. Any council, President Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very pleased with the results of the outreach plan that was implemented for this particular class is going to be starting. I think I mentioned before that I did participate at Rodney Square. We had very aggressive opportunities going on there, outreach to try to make certain that our recruiters were meeting people up and down Market Street. And I think we see the results of this. I also think it's a great idea what the director is just revealing to us now, that these people are going to be assigned to current paramedics, and I think that would help to assure their success. You know, going back to when I was at DuPont, and diversity was a relatively new issue, a new phenomenon, and it was always believed at DuPont that the only way we would achieve greater diversity is if it came from the top down. And that's something I still believe today, and I just want to commend the director, commend the county executive, for their efforts to make it certain that we are trying to diversify this workforce in Newcastle County, and particularly in an area where we've had real challenges for the last 20 years I've been here. And I was told even early on by a fellow council person that minorities did not aspire to be paramedics, or they did not aspire to be first responders. And that's just not the facts. It's been proven here in a very short period of time that is not the fact, that we just have to work harder to achieve these goals. I even see the same thing today when I look at the volunteer fire companies. Well, you know, there's very little diversity. And every time I mention that, only thing I hear is that, well, you know, we are all volunteers, as if minorities don't volunteer. So I think that's just the scapegoat. And I just finally want to applaud you guys for what you've done, and I'm very pleased about it.
Councilman Smiley, then Councilman Cardini.
I'm just curious. I applaud the efforts. Great job. Of the 16, how many of them are Delaware residents? Do we know that?
Mm-hmm. I'll just... Probably half, over half, over half. There's one from Connecticut. There's one from Virginia. They're from Maryland. And I think the rest are really from Delaware. Most of whom either went to the University of Delaware or Louisiana University.
Councilman, you okay?
Yeah, I just...
Councilman Cartier and Councilman Street.
I'd just like to, you know, add my accolade for you folks as well, because it seems like not only do we have a challenging, innovative training regime that's going to mentor these people, we broke the monopoly of the institution that kind of held a stranglehold on our training process, which I think is an important message to send. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we're responding and providing opportunities for veterans, right? And I can tell you, everybody knows, you know, the U.S. military is going to be downsizing for the foreseeable future. There are going to be lots of these folks out here that have transferable skills or career goals that are very similar to the public safety mission of this government, and we got ample opportunity. So I'm glad you're engaging that. And lastly, and not least, but, you know, workforce diversity, and we're seeing some real progress with that in this division. So, you know, just superior leadership for administration, yourselves. And, you know, I'm really pleased to see you move it forward.
We had a meeting with the police last week, and an area that we're going to spend a lot of time, we're going to focus in on, and as the chief was saying, not just in Delaware, but up and down the East Coast, we know that a lot of good people are coming out of the military. Mm-hmm. And we're going to find a way to get to as many bases up and down the East Coast as possible, and identify, again, some more good candidates for the police positions. So we're going to do that. We're going to stay focused in on that group of people who, again, who are experienced, they're mature, they've been out in the world, and they would probably be good candidates for police officers, just as the ones that we have up to this point for paramedics.
Councilman Street.
I probably can't properly convey in words how pleased I am, how surprised I am. And just to be completely forthcoming, I raised all the sand that I raised, and I remember seeing to it that the issue got on the front page of the paper, created controversy purposely, intentionally, and as a two so-called radio people dedicate a show to something should be done with me and yada, 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 yada. But I honestly thought that it would not come to fruition on my watch, any semblance of it. I actually thought that I was hopefully laying the groundwork for whoever replaced me, role and function, and for others coming behind me that it may come to fruition on their watch. But under your leadership, under your commitment, under this county executive, and all the people who are working with you, it looks like some of it is going to come to fruition, and I'm truly grateful, and quite frankly, it was worth all the headache and the aggravation. And you know, when you do what I try to do, you're not making anybody mad, you're not really doing your job, so that's the way I look at it. But I honestly am pleasingly surprised, because I thought it would be long after I was out of the arena before it came to reality. So thank you.
And one last thing, Councilman Holland mentioned it. It starts at the very top, and my boss made it perfectly clear about diversification, diversifying the workforce. We talked about it. We showed him the plan. We told him what we're going to try to do, to try to recruit people of color. And then we went out and we did it. And I'm not sure how many grandparents were around the table, but if you can remember seeing your grandbaby for the first time, that was the look on Executive Gordon's face when he came into our building and saw those 16 young folks for the first time. And after they introduced themselves to us and talked about you know, where they came from and why they were in that room that day. He was a very proud man, and really the perfect guy, and so was I, because it was truly, I really wanted to bring them up here for you guys to meet them, but maybe sometime down the road we'll bring them down here and so you can meet them. But I guarantee you, once you do see them and meet them, you'll be impressed. You'll be impressed with their attitudes and their skill level. I mean, one lady this year read over 150 books.
She needs a job.
But that's how the type of people we have in this group. So, thank you for. And I know Chief Tan mentioned it last time he stood in front of you. Thank you for your support. You know, and allowing us to first move forward and fill this class, because we know it was important, and obviously you guys did too. So we thank you for your support from day one.
Well, and one final note: it's a proven fact, and I think our police department, Colonel Setting, and in past years, and this council has certainly authorized it not only overfill classes, but to conduct the necessary number of classes to keep the staffing up. And as we look towards, whether it's our police department or our emergency medical service division, all facets of public safety, we get into a situation where at some point you have a lot of folks that are in the retirement mode and are ready to retire. And you know, so it's something that we need to be aware, keep aware that once a year may not just get it. And being able to have this council, and this council has been extremely supportive of public safety, to support getting the extra people in the class, so that at the end of the day we try to keep our numbers up, you know, that's something that we got to continue doing. And you know, when we see the numbers of county police officers that have retired and are retiring, I'm not sure that one class a year that we're going to be able to keep up with it.
You're probably right.
Yep. Okay. Any other questions, Council?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we're going to call on our emergency operations, emergency management coordinator, Dave Carpenter. And we have a major nor'easter that's going to be moving into the area tomorrow night. So give us the good news, Dave.
show.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. Dave Partner from the Cass County Emergency Management. Just got off the actually have a state conference call going on right now. We have another conference call a little later to discuss some of the assets that we'll be possibly requesting. It looks like the Weather Service is sticking with what they've had so far, up downing some of the numbers on the ice side a little bit, which gives me a little more comfort. As the director and I spoke earlier about giving Chester County's trials and tribulations this past week and us just missing this last storm a little bit. Everybody kind of saw the numbers and the differences, and I know you know in your districts the differences between south and east of the 95 corridor and north and west of the 95 corridor of what we saw with the past storm, that given some of the earlier forecasts for this storm, we were looking like most everybody north of the C&D Canal would have been probably potentially in a situation that Chester County had. And if nobody knows, at the highlight, Chester County had over 75% of their customers with PICO out of power. That's about 180,000 out of 212,000 customers at the highlight of the storm. They were still at about 40% without power as of Friday evening, and by Sunday, Monday morning, they were down to 5%. So the mutual aid that responded to them in a short amount of time was pretty remarkable. Given the 3 o'clock call we just had, it looks like late Wednesday night, they're saying about 8 or 9 o'clock that night is the start time. It's going to start off as all snow. Given our cold temperatures right now, temperatures will actually become a little more milder or moderate, getting up into the higher 30s early Thursday morning. As this system forms off the coast and starts to, it's a typical nor'easter that's going to hug the coast and go on a northeast track. Most snowfall totals for north of Dover all the way through Newcastle County are looking like 6 to 8 inches at this point in time. It's still calling about 0.01, one-tenth of an inch to a tenth of an inch of ice accumulation from the sleet and freezing rain. That should be it towards the end of the storm on Thursday, during Thursday time frame, as the storm starts to pull away and warmer air comes in from that system moving north. We could possibly see a snow-rain mixture towards the end of the system. So 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock start. Some meteorologists out there are talking that it may start a little later for us, so we're going to gauge our EOC activation over the next day or so, given that time period and some of the resources that we may have on hand, ending by Thursday evening. Late Wednesday night into Thursday evening. The heaviest snow will be Thursday morning, early Thursday morning through the Thursday a.m. commute, most likely ending about midday and then tapering off to some light snow. As I said, the possibility of some of the freezing rain above the C&D Canal might occur, but not majorly. So.
We thank you.
No problem.
Yeah.
Director?
It's
going to be a difficult. That amount of ice usually is just a trace. It's a nuisance. It will not cause tree limbs to break and fall. It usually doesn't cause power lines to have an issue up to a tenth of an inch. Weak ones or ones that are already weak, it may cause a little bit, but it definitely is going to cause a problem with the transportation system. The caution here is that even if we get a tenth or two tenths of an ice, that's on the verge in combination with the snow, because the snow is going to be a wet snow. It's not going to be dry, light, fluffy snow that we have because it's a nor'easter and it's pulling the moisture off the ocean. So it's going to be a wet snow from start to finish. So that is a caution that we would definitely have to, and a hazard that is out there that we'll have to keep an eye on.
Add a little wind to that.
Makes
for a mess.
Yes.
So. Councilman Cartier?
Well, this last storm, I can tell you, the points immediately north of Pennsylvania got hammered hard, and there are still people without power up there, and now we got this coming. And I'm just telling you, a lot of people are going to be without power in Newcastle County in the next 48 hours or whatever. So it's going to be big challenges.
When is the next conference call?
I did not hear it because I jumped off before. So it'll probably be tomorrow morning sometime. So we'll know some more probably after 9, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, most likely.
Okay, Dave, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Appreciate it. We'll go to other Councilwoman Diller.
Yes, I just want to remind us as we're coming up on the budget hearings that, you know, I really think that we do need some kind of solution to deal with rabid animals put into the public safety budget when we deal with this through, you know, if we're going to go with an addition to the Kent County contract. But, I mean, I'll just remind you that the constituent who from my district who came here to speak made 10 to 13 different phone calls, received no assistance in the end, and a couple of days before he came, ended up finding the rabid cat dead under a neighbor's porch. So the animal was never taken care of. So I just cannot see allowing constituents, you know, in New Castle County not to have some recourse when we're dealing with a rabid animal.
Councilman Smiley?
I know, I appreciate you floating that out here. I just want to say, you know, I'm still grinding about our having dog control from the state. I've had the rabid animal situation, had a raccoon in my daughter's backyard. And the only thing I say is, you know, called Deneric. They responded. They sent someone out, and they trapped it, and they took it. I'm just really concerned, you know, with costing us so much out of the taxpayer dollar now for the dog control, with us voluntarily taking on a function that currently is, however haphazardly, and should be handled by the state. Game control, Deneric, whoever. So I'm just really concerned about that and what the dollar value on that would be for what you want. I have no idea. So it's just my concern.
Other members of council? Okay. Councilman Cartier?
Just going into that, is that really Deneric's job to do that? Are they have that responsibility?
Councilwoman Dillon?
I think the difference is when you have a raccoon, it's a wild animal.
Okay.
When you've got a cat, it's a domestic animal.
As of two years ago,
yes.
That's where it changed.
That's the issue.
2 years ago, the state declared them domestic.
So if you have a wild animal that's rabid or you think is rabid, Deneric will take care of it. It's the problem with the domestic animal, like the cat, which is why, you know, Mr. Wheatley made 10 to 13 phone calls and no assistance because nobody seemed to know what to do with this.
You call it a baby.
If we would look to license them, so we generate a little bit of revenue. License or tattoo. Where's Boyle? Is he back there? Is he still breathing? He's still breathing. He usually sucks air when I say that. All right. It'll be a discussion, I'm sure.
Any other comment from council? I can tell you, just in response to that, I think there's a lot of areas of animal care and control that are not being addressed. And as Councilman Smiley stated, that you know, we've inherited this from the state of Delaware. But at the same time, when you need something, you get into this finger-pointing mm-hmm. contest. And it's like, who do the residents call?
Right.
And so at some point, we've got to have them define who is going to be responsible for it. The one thing that I'm not real happy with Kent County SPCA over is, you know, it's every time we ask for something, it's more money. And I'm not too sure that they're, in some cases, doing a job that they should be doing for us in the first place. That's just my observation. I continue to get citizen inquiries and complaints about how some of our citizens' animals are cared for, how in some cases they've been euthanized when they could have been returned. So I think there's some real issues that are kind of entwined in this whole thing. And it's fine to have Kent County SPCA come in here for a meeting and they put on their little dog and pony show. But I can tell you that we have some constituents in this county that have, you know, voiced some real concerns over, you know, how animal care and control has been handled by Kent County SPCA. And the unfortunate thing is, I think they're the only act in town now, aren't they?
Yep.
Just
about.
So of course, the one that was throwing all the darts went bankrupt because they couldn't afford to operate.
Mm-hmm. Councilman Street?
Well, it just seems to me that, to a certain extent, we're finger pointing at the same time, Delphi, all of us maintain that we have these working relationships with state senators and state representatives that we share territories with. But it's only a few people that actually go down to Dover and have a conversation, And my view is, we sit here several years back to back now complaining about this was imposed on us. Well, we need to have a conversation. At least administration to administration, and I think it should go a step further. It should be leadership to leadership. And if the administration has a legislative agenda, certainly we should have a conversation about this being part and parcel to that legislative agenda, because we keep talking about it, we keep complaining, we keep pointing fingers, and haven't done anything of substance, in my view, to really try to seek a change.
Councilman?
I just want to say, Councilman Street, you're right.
Lord have mercy.
But I just want to say, this isn't a shot at the storm's already coming. I got nothing to lose. And this isn't a shot at the current administration. But under the past administration, I can tell you, I was down in Dover numerous times. Christian Dwyer was actively engaging with Senator Blevins, who was working on the dog control issue, and we had a commitment from her that part of the study, an overwhelming part of the study, was going to revolve around returning the dog control to the state. Having them take it back. The administration's changed. Kristen wasn't there. Next thing you know, they form a group, and all they're coming out with now are new things that they want us to do with dog control. Mm-hmm. She completely went away from any thought of the state taking it back. We're on that path, and it was going. And I think that's also part of the problem that you have with the state legislature getting too many breaks. They get away from us. We need to keep them around the clock.
I think that the conversation's exactly right. There's too much disconnect between government to government. And, you know, seems like everyone wants to hold Newcastle County accountable. And we've got state legislators down there that haven't bellied up anymore over the past 4 or 5 years as far as the cost share of the paramedic program.
At the risk of getting a phone call, maybe we could raise the gas tax in Newcastle County and take care of the dog.
No, we can't even get hotel motel tax. So. But there is a disconnect. And whether it's paramedics, whether it's animal care and control, it's not an even playing field. You know, the things keep coming our way, and with nothing to help support it. So, okay, anything else under other? Public comment?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion made, second adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried.
Not voted. I've been traveling up to Paoli Pike. That looked like.